pals.
Greetings, pals.
Greetings, pals.
Welcome to the podcast, Around the Power. Thank you for listening.
Is that it? Thank you.
My name is Frank.
My name is Marcus.
My name is Tom.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.
I just want to say thanks. Appreciate it.
Really appreciate you guys.
How capricious
we
of
are
you.
So grateful. Oh,
capricious.
I wear capri pants.
I'm glad you're using that word of the day calendar I got you.
Today, you made that joke already.
And capri pants is the one on there. Did I make that joke already? God damn it.
Yeah. Who are you, Ryan Reynolds? So creative.
I was on the phone the other day with a friend of mine, and they really wanted me to do the Scooby-Doo laugh, and I didn't know how, and she got angry at me that I wouldn't
do
try.
It.
How does it?
No. I know how it goes.
Is that it?
That was it.
Can you do it?
Now I'm on the spot.
This is it. I went, well, now you've put me on the spot. That's pretty good. And Frank?
This is the podcast where we talk about movies, love it or hate it. We debate it. We're talking about The Hurt Locker.
What a party pooper.
The Hurt Locker.
Shit canning us. The Hurt Locker.
2008.
2008? Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Wow.
Wow, you made me doubt that. The text is very small.
What a time.
We've only just begun.
To be alive.
Yeah. This is a Tom choice.
This is
Tom chose this.
He did.
And we rate these films out of 11. Tom.
Yes. Why do we do that?
Yeah, please.
The Hurt Locker is an expression that means the pain that one might endure through the pressure of an explosion, right? And there are 11 parts in your body where that could be an access or an entry point. And
Name
they
them.
Are largely, right. So you've got all of your access points. So you've got your eyes, 2, nose, 4, ears, 6, mouth, 7. You've got your rectum, 8, mm-hmm. your urethra or meatus, as it's known, 9.
Okay, go on.
And your navel or belly button, 10. Where's the 11th is my question for you guys.
The soul. Ooh.
The soul. He got it. I made all this up. None of
28
this is
true. Grand. Yeah, of course it is.
But I liked watching you count along with the holes on our bodies.
I'm embarrassed that I believed it.
What's the meatus? Is it really called the meatus?
The tip of your penis is called the meatus.
Huh. Meatus and butthead, hey?
Meatus and butthead.
That's
good. More you know. No.
The more you know.
Okay, shout your name if you like this film.
Tom.
Marcus.
Frank.
Yeah.
Damn it, of course.
That's a good movie.
Yeah, best picture.
Someone recently picked a terrible movie, but now we're back to good ones. So thank you for joining in.
Yeah, Marcus, you idiot.
Yeah, sure.
God.
Definitely my choice.
Okay, well, numbers. Give me some numbers.
Oh, I'll go.
Yeah.
7.7.
Yeah.
Thomas.
9.5.
Whoa.
Really?
Big fan.
7.7.
Hey.
Yeah.
Okay.
Look, I really liked it, and then I didn't love the ending.
Yes.
This is a popular opinion. People
it's a bit
are
like,
not so into the last 20, 30 minutes of this movie, or even maybe the entire last act, you could say, which I guess is.
Yeah, the last 20, 30 minutes, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. How many acts is it, 17? I don't know what the structure of a film normally is.
Well,
but
normally
17
in
sounds
Sister
right.
Act, how many of those were there?
Well, there's two.
Yes.
Three.
And the Sisterhood of the Traveling
there's
Pants.
There's like Sister Threes.
Ah, that'd have
act
to be a three.
Three. Huh?
There'd be a spin-off somewhere.
Where? On Tubi.
None of your business.
Hold on, TV. Hold on. Sister, Twisted Sister, Scissor Sisters. We're getting into it now. We've got 17 of them.
Stop.
We're talking about sister acts.
Directed by Catherine Bigelow, written by Mark Boll, starring in a breakout performance by Jeremy Renner.
Yes.
Incredible.
Anthony Mackie and Brian Geraghty.
Brian Geraghty. Good guy.
No, Geraghty. He's, we're not probably going to get into
Heart
it.
Heart Bear, no. I think. Is I think that I read that.
Do you know what I think is great? We've just come off a Marvel movie last episode.
Yeah.
To see Marvel people, and we were talking about Hugh Jackman not being given enough to do in Deadpool and Wolverine. Talk about getting enough to do for like actors I've seen in so many Marvel movies, and you go, oh, Jeremy Renner's like good, right? Anthony Mackie's a piece of crap. Hate him.
Yes.
And then in this, I went, like them both.
What?
In fact,
I
maybe,
hate that I agree as well.
Yeah, kind of love them both in this. And I was like,
I
hated Anthony Mackie.
Stand it.
Tell me about the Anthony Mackie hate.
Can't stand him.
In the Marvel movies?
There is something. He's just, one of those. Don't worry, we're going to talk about this later,
okay.
I'm sure. He's a very punchable actor. There's
God,
something about
isn't
him
he?
That I just.
And all the behind.
His little lips and hips.
He's got tiny hips.
Tiny lips.
He's a big boy, but he's not.
He's
not ripped enough for my liking.
He's
tiny
really
lips,
smart.
Tiny hips, no ribs.
Not ribs. He's not ribs.
Okay.
There's a smugness about him that pisses me off.
Well, have you seen all the behind the scenes footage? He's always like, cut it, can it. And he's like, down and go to the trailer. That's my Anthony Mackie impression. It's not good.
On
I apologize. Like on all the Marvel stuff. So he lands on a big stunt bag and he's like, go to my trailer. Which is like, yeah. I think, a joke that he's doing, but it's like, imagine. He just sounds. Yeah, yeah, but then, it's not funny.
And then they
you
hand
just sound
him
like
Captain America to make it worse.
Oh, look, why is he Captain?
He barely registers for me in the MCU. I guess I don't really think of him within the MCU.
Yeah, because he's the Falcon.
We've jumped straight to Anthony Mackie as a supporting actor.
He's very good in this.
In the Hurt Locker. He is actually quite good in this.
I really like him in 8 Mile, which is his debut film, where he's the guy rapping against Eminem.
He's not a very good rapper, which is makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and Eminem's pretty good,
Do we see him rap at all?
Does Eminem sing a song?
He raps against Eminem. He does the whole, like, you're white and all this, and then Eminem's like, oh, boy, am I, and then, like, doubles down.
Yeah. No. In battle, he doesn't rap at all.
Anthony Mackie.
No, because the whole thing is that B-Rabbit goes first, raps about himself in, like, a shit-on-myself way, and then Mackie doesn't get to rap.
But he's already... No, he has rapped.
I'm almost positive he had the rap
I'm
verse.
Positive you're wrong.
Okay. We'll find that out, listeners.
Yes, we will. We go.
But...
Or you can tell us. You can just send us an email.
Write us in, Frank Kerr at Deadpool.com. I don't know.
Ohheypals at gmail.com.
That makes sense.
Ohheypals.
The Hurt Locker.
Yeah. What does Hurt Locker actually mean? Do you guys know?
It is about the pain you feel in the explosion or the pain of being in war.
Yes.
And they're the two sort of...
The idea is if you're just feeling in pain, or even if you're within a bomb radius, maybe you're in the Hurt Locker there because you're going to feel pain.
A 75-meter radius for the last one.
Yeah.
This is an affecting movie.
This is a really visceral sort of moment at the start. You know, when you see Guy Pearce, by the way, amazing.
Great cameo, essentially. Great cameo. Spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't seen it. He's not in the film very long.
Guy Pearce just gets on what we, I guess, would perceive as outside the blast radius.
Yeah.
It's not.
No.
He doesn't look like he's even directly affected by the blast other than getting thrown forwards, but
you see the blood splatter
on the inside of his helmet and you go, oh, shit.
Yeah.
And that's a lot.
It's a rough start. Because the tension – sorry, Tom.
No, the
tension is so well built throughout this film. For all of those bomb scenes,
it is.
They are drawn out, they are lengthy, and you know something's happening and you're like just waiting for something to explode.
Yeah.
It is. Kath and subversion of – having a big Guy Pearce. And you're like, well, he's going to be fine. He's the one I recognize. It's Guy Pearce. Right?
Yeah.
So Kath and
same with
I,
Ralph Fiennes.
Ralph
later on.
Fiennes when he shows up. Kath and I watch this together and she sees Guy Pearce and goes, oh, okay, that's the, like, says out loud, so that's the lead. And I was like, sure. And then.
You never knew it's going to come again.
And then the same thing happened where the explosion went off and she saw him get thrown. She didn't see the blood splatter.
Oh.
And 20 seconds later, she's like, wait, he's dead? How would he have died from that? And I'm like, and I'm not about to be like, oh, as an explosives expert, but I'm like, the thing this movie is doing that
you
most-
You seem to be an expert on everything else.
Tell you
so
what.
As well.
the thing that this movie is doing that most films don't do about explosions-
Sorry, keep going.
Honk shoe, is that it uses that idea of like, it's not going to be a big grand cinematic thing with like these plumes of fire and this like gasoline explosion you see in every other fucking Transformers movie or whatever.
Yeah, not gasoline.
Sure. It is just like the shockwave. It is just
concussive sort of impact.
100%. And the force that you is invisible in many ways of just like air molecules being disturbed and disbanded at such a rate that it just ruptures you.
Just like Star Wars.
Invisible
force.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that was a big inspiration for this film.
Absolutely.
Catherine Bigelow was like, I wanted to make this generation Star Wars. So.
She did speak about the explosions looking, because everyone, explosive experts were always like, that's not what they look like. Thanks, Michael Bay,
less
but
fire.
You're wrong.
Yeah,
yes. Way less fire.
Which is not to say explosions like that have
make
place
exciting.
In big movies, of course, but this movie is not that. I love the close-up on the car and the rust of it getting lifted when that explosion
very
goes.
Good
it's
shot.
Incredible.
Yep.
That's the moment when I watched this in cinemas like 15 years ago where I was like, I've never seen a shot like that before. It's so fucking cool. I really, really like this movie. We should talk, I suppose, William James is Jeremy Renner's character. He comes in as an EOD, an explosive ordnance disposal tech.
He's like the replacement. Guy Pearce perishes.
Yes.
And then Jeremy Renner is brought in.
Jeremy Renner's at the head of Sandborn, which is Anthony Mackie's character. And I can't actually remember Brian Geraghty's
Eldridge.
Name. Eldridge. Yeah. And it's basically a pretty plotless, episodic film of them just going around disarming IEDs, improvised explosive devices. And
thank you. I was not sure.
Occasionally, some people might not know.
I didn't know.
Okay. And some.
I knew it was a device.
Yes. And people.
Like a film device, like to move the plot forward. Which is the exact opposite of what I do
of what
for this
we're doing
conversation.
Now, which we had a device.
Okay. Sorry. The device is I leave. Okay, continue. Sorry, what are you saying?
God, you ruined the sincerity of asking a genuine question. And now he thinks you're a dick again.
Okay. Anyway, and it's them going around disarming bombs all throughout Iraq. And the film was made during the time where the occupation of Iraq was still very much, you know, it was focal in the American sort of occupation. And it's a very gripping film that I don't think is very political, which is not an original observation. They talked about making this being like, we didn't want to go boo Iraq, boo America, boo all this. We were just like, this is what's happening. Here you go.
Yeah, it feels like this is someone's first-hand take and this is what their experience was. Because it's like, hey, here's 30 days in Iraq, literally just walking around disarming bombs.
Yeah.
And kind of like the camaraderie and the relationships that build through that time, because it's like such a high-pressure environment to meet people and to make, you know, work friendships or whatever you want to call them. I will
say part of the reason why I couldn't score it higher is because I still felt that at the start it starts very strong and then at times it leans into that like hoorah, America's awesome, war's fun shit. You know, they really glorify sort of American wartime.
Can you specify a scene that does that? I didn't feel
that. It's a strange scene. It's at the same time I love this scene so much and then there was moments where I was like, oh, it's really like it's almost painting this in sort of a this can be fun way is it's when they're out in the desert and they've got the sniper in the distance and
where they encounter Raffines and all the other British guys.
And then they're just hunkered down waiting for the guys in the
That's right. Shed. Yeah. It's a sniper battle, between two areas. And Rafe is pretty great. And then there's a couple of like coined in sort of comedy lines almost. It's a little bit funny. I found myself laughing audibly and I was like, it was a good bit, but also
bit of banter between the guys.
I find that the a lot of the hoorah sort of and the, like the wrestling and the
That night when they get home and they're drinking and they're punching each other and all that.
Yeah.
I think that is feels very observational more than like an endorsement. You know, I don't see that scene and think Catherine Bigelow's like, yeah, fuck yeah, America. I think she's like, they're rowdy boys. This is what they do. And it is very fun that a female director is like, of course I'm going to have this scene.
That's a very interesting aspect.
Yes. She's got a female gaze to it almost where she's being like, get a load of these fuckers, right?
You know? Yeah, and I want to go back to that scene in the desert where Ralph Fiennes has been shot. I don't see the fun there, nor do I see the pro-America thing. It's Anthony Mack is a good shot and they have to just lay there for so long.
It's a great scene,
again,
don't get me wrong.
The tension and slow payoff of reward. And
the other thing too is the film starts with what I think is leaning into talking about the mental health side of this.
Yeah.
Especially
it really pays off for me.
My one critique is what happens to Eldridge. He gets shot, right? He breaks his leg in six places and
gets
shipped off.
It's a really great subplot, especially with him and his counselor.
Yeah.
Right?
Ugh.
That actor, I can't remember his name.
He's great though, right?
He's from Dexter's first season. See, Christian Camargo. It's the only other thing
I've seen. I knew I recognized
him. He's the ice truck killer,
Right. He's such a strange.
Only other thing I've seen actor. Him in those two things. And he's pretty good in this, and he was really good in Dexter, right?
Yeah.
But that's it. That's when I see him, I'm like, oh shit, it's the ice truck killer.
Yeah. And I think that they had this really great subplot there with him and the counselor. And, you know, at one point he says to him, you know, you need to be in the shit. Like, and
he goes, come out in the field.
Maybe I'll do that one day. And I think that
sounded really dismissive. It was like, yeah, well, you know, if it calls for it, I'll be out there. And it's like, no, you won't.
And then he brings him out there and of course you know something's going to go wrong because the situation you can see him handling at the time doesn't seem to be going well.
Yeah.
You know, he's not handling it like a soldier would handle it.
I didn't think that was going to happen.
I remember being shocked by it when I first saw it.
I was like,
I think surely you knew as soon as the camera pans out to a long shot from the car, you know something's coming.
Yeah. You knew something's coming, but that was the moment. I didn't think he was going to get blown up. Then after the fact, I go, well, of course, because that's such a good emotional
moment. Then that's it. It sort of dies there.
Well, yeah. Then what happens? Because I want to know what happens to Eldridge. Like, he's got no counselor. He gets the scene after that is when he gets kidnapped and like ran through.
Mm. Yeah, they're running off with him. The presumably the people who propagated the bombing that they're exploring. Yeah. That is the weird sticky part at the end of the movie.
They could have stretched that scene out just a little bit longer and done more with it.
Mm. Where they're going through and exploring.
Him. Yeah,
yeah. It's an interesting sequence because people have debated. I watched this movie in cinemas back in Lonnie back in 2009, and then
Launceston, Tasmania.
Launceston, Tasmania.
Humble brag.
And I've watched it. Yeah, man.
The world's worst cinema.
Yeah, I had three people I was sharing a seat with. You know, and I've seen it. Maybe this is maybe my fifth time seeing it.
On average, how many times a year?
Well.
What's your favorite question?
You know what it's from, right?
Yeah. Yes. Interview with the Vampire.
Oh.
That's your thing where you're like,
yeah. I'm quoting you.
Every time it's you, they're like, this movie's a 5.5 for me or a 5 for me. I watch it on average once a year and we're like, what are you talking about?
You don't remember that?
No, but that's very funny.
That is funny.
On average. Okay, great. So you've watched it a lot.
I've watched it a lot. And read a lot about it. And I read, like, I used to read Roger Ebert all the time, and I've read a lot of things since then. And the part that people either enjoy in a strange way because it's a good contrast to the rest of the film, or they're like, nah, it loses me, is when he starts going looking for Beckham's killers. Which, you know, Beckham didn't actually die, but we can get to that. And then afterwards, he starts trying to go all vigilante and catching the people who have blown up that hospital at the end. Like, James does this, and he does it with Sanborn and Eldridge. And he sucks at it. He's bad at it, right? Yeah. And I think the film's kind of shaky abruptness in those sections and its murkiness is meant to demonstrate that, like, this is not his skill set. This is not his area. And he's a guy that's sort of obsessed with puzzles, but he can't really engage with them when there's too much of a human element. He can engage with a mechanical puzzle. He can engage with one that is to do with mechanisms and to do with triggering devices and understanding how sequences of things might work on a tech level or like on a structural engineering level. But when it involves people, he sucks. He's really bad at it. And he gets Eldridge shot and he doesn't find out what happened to that boy, you know, and then it discovers later that wasn't Beckham that got killed anyway, right? So I think that's what those sections are doing. And I think Eldridge's plot getting kind of cut abruptly at the end is just to suggest of like, yeah, this is what happens. Like people get caught up in what this guy's always been the most anguished and apprehensive of them. Him getting shot and going home with a broken leg is maybe the best version of what could happen to him, and it's still pretty shit.
Yeah.
And then we get an ending with Sanborn as well. I'm jumping all over the place here. But
what happens to Sanborn?
Sanborn, okay. Shall we do this really quickly? Do we want to go through a general sequence of what happens throughout the film? Just because I think it builds to a really fantastic final.
You want me to do the synopsis, or do you want to do
it? We kind of have, if you want to give it one.
No,
want.
I don't.
Okay. So, the first thing we see is Guy Pearce and then dying right at the start. And the setup we get is this understanding that there's a bit of like a cat and mouse, like game of minds strategic thing where a bomb is set. Maybe it's someone from a distance. Maybe it's someone in a different area who is going to trigger it at some point. And there's no understanding of when or why that might happen.
Yeah, when or how.
That's such a great question,
isn't it? I love it. I love the element of this film that
what they're the battling, right? What is the
purpose of this?
This is
to kill American soldiers.
Yes.
Yeah, but they've sucked in a whole team of American soldiers. So, like, what are they waiting for?
Plenty of the time they're waiting for it to be unknown. So once the EOD's there, they're like, well, maybe the ideal is we try and explode it when there's an opportunity to kill more, but then when there's an opportunity to get rid of some of their ordnance and deal damage to some of their tanks and machinery. But when it's just one guy in a suit, it's like, well, if you get one guy, you get one guy. But that's why they so rarely blow up or trigger them, because they're kind of waiting for something else. And that guy, the first time that Jeremy Renner goes to defuse that bomb that's got all those tanks around him, which is an incredible shot, when it's from above looking
he's
down.
He's pulling the wire and gets one, and he's like, it's linked to more and stuff.
This fucking renegade puppeteer bullshit that he's pulling. When he started pulling on that wire, I was like, stop. What are you doing?
The wire coming out doesn't.
Do you know who he reminds me of?
Me during video games?
No. He reminds me of. This is a weird pull, hot take. He reminds me of Riggs from Lethal Weapon.
Yeah.
He's got that real sort of Riggs energy where he's just like, I'm fucking crazy and I'm into this.
Yeah. But he's also methodical. He's like quietly, like a little unhinged or a little bit too energized by the adrenaline. But he is still,
I'm still hearing Riggs, but you're
Riggs does literally, though.
When he's working through the car bomb and he just like starts one area and he's like working maniacally, but he's like, it's not there. It's not there. Where's the trigger? Where's the device? Where's the wire?
He won't let it go. There's that OCD.
No, he throws off the headset. Yeah.
About the only time you see him lose it, only a couple times in the movie, and that's the first one where he's in the car and he cannot fucking work out where the device is and where he can take the fuse, right? But yeah, he sees when he's doing that first bomb, and there's a guy watching him from above, and you get that sense that the guy's like, well, what do I do now, right? Do I wait to see if he's not able to do it, and then maybe they're going to have to call other people in, and then maybe I can trigger this explosion later? And it's that decision time of there is some trigger device attached to this bomb, or there is someone in charge of when this will blow up, and I have to try and work out if I'm going to get to it before they are, or if I'm going to be able to defuse it before they decide it's the
ideal
time.
Because then the guy upstairs starts running down to, you would assume, to trigger
presumably, and he sees Jeremy Renner, and Jeremy Renner holds up the fucking trigger pin, just like, I got you, motherfucker. And it's like,
and he just keeps running. He's like,
drops the battery.
A scene that I do love to get away from the synopsis, a scene that happens later is when he is, they're going through the boxes after they've been drinking, they're going through the box of all the triggers that he's saved. And it's like, yeah, I like this guy. He was really good. Like, he's critiquing the bomb makers and he has like this relationship with them, which is really interesting, I think.
It is interesting. It's a film, like a lot of American films about war to do with psychology, and yet it's one of my favorite, especially in the recent era of the last like 20, 25 years, because it doesn't quite do what so many of them do, which is they go, what have we done to ourselves as Americans? Yeah. What have we done to our boys?
Yeah.
Look what we've done. It's like, what have you done to Afghanistan? What have you done to Iraq? Fuck, I'm sorry about the soldiers. Not that they're not important, but you're asking about the psychic damage done to the occupation or the people who are occupying, not the people who are occupying.
That was my first sort of reaction watching this film is when they're just driving around Iraq and you're like, imagine living there.
Oh, yeah.
That is the most horrible. Like, we complain about cost of living and everything's just too expensive and it's hard to live. It's like, yeah, but there aren't bombs in the street.
If I see two police officers at a train station, I'm like, give it a rest, boys. Like, let us live.
This country.
Yeah, exactly. And then it's just like all military. And yet I don't think this film, separate from so many of those other ones, is doing what have we done to ourselves as Americans? Like, what have we done? It's basically just going, get a load of this fucking guy. Like, what's up with this one guy?
Yeah, it's just a personal story.
It
happens to be a
study of this guy's pathology and psychology, and it's fascinating, and Jeremy Renner is really good in it. Great performance.
However, and again, we're jumping forward here, when we're talking about the ending, like, obviously you want to understand why he is the way he is, you know, why he gets such a kick out of this and why he is so reckless with how he goes about it, especially in such a specific role in the military where you have to be so precise in what you do.
Yeah. Mm.
And he's far more gung-ho than most dudes just walking around with a rifle, right? It's kind of fucked. So then you look at him go home, he leaves, it's like 2 days left, and then you see him back home, and then you get the kind of depiction of what his life looks like outside of Afghanistan.
Who's his wife?
Ooh. The Wasp from Marvel.
Evangeline Lilly. And she's from Lost as well, isn't she?
That's where she's. Yeah. And she's from the Hobbit films.
And from the news for being super anti-vax. Weird person.
Oh, really?
She's basically retired. Like, but it seems softly, wowzers, like people have been like, she's not allowed on film sets anymore. Oh, like, dear. She's
more like Evangelist.
Sure.
Well, yeah, I don't think
Evangelist silly.
We got her.
We didn't see enough from her, I think.
It's still nothing from her.
It's a really interesting use, but I do think. Well, sorry, you keep going. You were saying you see him in his home life.
I think that you get this sort of very on the nose, like, oh yeah, his home life sucks, and he needs more in life. Like, he's just not satisfied. And so you see him go back.
Yeah.
Ugh.
But it doesn't suck, his home life. It's just not what he needs. No. But you see it, and you're like, that seems fine.
That doesn't have the emotional heft that I wanted in that moment, though, for him to then go, oh fuck, he went back. Mm. I was like,
Had a bit of heft when it goes. Days remaining in Bravo, 365.
And then the needle drop. And you're like, I mean, that's amazing that's just what's pumping in his head now. Yeah. He's like, I'm fucking back, baby. Like, this is exactly where I belong.
I respect it as an ending, but I don't like it.
Oh, I love it.
You know, like I go,
really?
Yeah.
Super into it.
I love it. I have very little critique of this film other than just when it's sort of happening outside, the sequences with the bomb defusal and with the sniper sequence when they're in the trench and they're shooting the guys from a distance, so much of that is so great that there are just kind of occupying strands between those scenes that I'm like, and this is all good. This is all very competent.
It fills and progresses the story nicely.
Yes.
Like the scene with Beckham, the DVD kid, the first time, and then when he goes back to see, you assume, Beckham's father, and he's like, who is this guy? Is he giving information? Like, and he's sort of starting to lose it. You're like, that's not like an incredible scene by itself, but it leads from where we've been into where we're going to go.
We should talk about that. So Beckham is the young boy who lives near the base, who loves soccer and calls himself Beckham, which is very cute.
Yeah.
And he's trying to sell like bootleg DVDs to Jeremy Renner and the others.
Yeah.
And Jeremy Renner, who has seemed like a pretty blasé guy, you know, even he's had that scene earlier where Anthony Mackie's like, I'm pretty sure I can figure out a piece of white redneck trash like you. And Jeremy Renner's like, guess you already did, right? He's unflappable.
Yeah. Cannot be flapped.
Cannot be flapped. Not to be flapped. and he sees this kid and you see a bit of an avuncular energy to him. Like he kind of has this sudden vibe with him where you're like, I could see how he's actually friendly. He's got like a real rapport with this kid.
But let's quickly talk about he has a son at home.
He does, which we find
which
out
they
later.
Don't talk about. And then he goes, well, how do you, yeah. Anthony Mackie goes, how do you do this, man? How do you, he's like, I just don't think about it.
Yeah.
And you're like, that's not true. You obviously do because your Beckham is your surrogate son.
I think he
hence it being so affecting when you think he's dead.
Yes, I think he compartmentalizes it. But when he meets Beckham, there's that energy. One of my favorite scenes in the film is not the first time he meets him, but the second time, where he's like, "Hey, that DVD you gave me was shit, yeah, terrible was quality."
Yeah.
And the kid's like, "No, no, 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 no," you know, and resells him another one. And he starts going, "But if this one is bad, I will come to you in your house with a rusty knife." And I will, I'm just kidding. And you're like, Jesus Christ, man, bit intense. So he's just a bit much always.
Yeah.
Like, but it's yeah. still,
doesn't know the line.
It's still cute. Anyway, they go into a building later and they find a young boy who has had a bomb sewed into him. Probably the most upsetting moment in the film.
Oh,
really, really upsetting.
God, it's nasty.
Very controversial because apparently there are records of this happening very little. You know, apparently there's like maybe one or two examples of people actually being used as body bombs.
Sure.
But they're out there.
How is that an effective tool?
Well, presumably you come to recover a corpse and then they explode it, right? But again, yeah. it's kind of the question is always to what end with these bombs? And some of the time I think it's just to cause disorientation, right? You know, it's like we're going to have these in places you're not going to expect them. You're not going to know when what is happening.
They're in bags of rubbish. They're in cars. They're Absolutely. In bodies. They're strapped to people who are alive, like faux suicide
exactly.
bombers. And there's no logic, so they can't like plan and get ahead.
Yes. We are going to blow things up.
The plan is to have no
arbitrarily plan. And you're just going to be destabilized. You're not going to be able
it's
to
learning
have
how
anything
to sneak
could explode.
Alcohol into Falls Festival. That same
I think it's the same sort of stress
Absolutely.
And tension. Absolutely.
Exact,
that is
exact
our Iraq.
Same, yeah. Exact
Absolutely.
Same thing.
Yeah.
That's our Iraq.
When people ask.
This is my Hurt Locker. I got to get to Falls.
but the, yeah, the, when he sees that body bomb and we see Jeremy Renner get quite upset at this idea of this kid that he liked being turned into a body bomb. And then later on we realize Beckham's still alive.
Mm.
And when he sees him the next time, he ignores him. And it is just him shutting down and going like, that has no use to me. I can't have that if I'm going to go out there and try to do this stuff because it's...
So, and it's not because it's a child, right?
I don't know if
it was specifically him.
Yes. I think I think if it was just a kid, he wouldn't have given a shit. I think he truly would have been like, this is another day, it's another bomb. But he's like,
because it's
this
Beckham
is a kid I recognize and I did have a rapport with.
Because it makes them a person.
Yes.
If you're going to war and there's just people in, you know, over there who are nondescript, it's so much easier to...
But in saying that, so then we talk about the scene with the suicide bomber, right?
Well, the forced suicide.
So the
father
the question
four,
is he right? really... is he forced? We don't know.
I think that scene is 100% played. If that actor's name is...
But no, it's before they go in,
right.
they're questioning his intention.
Right. That actor is called Sahail Dabbagh. For one scene performance, captivating.
Yeah.
How do you imagine the audition? Like, you know, we've done a few auditions in our time. Imagine that audition. Like, here you go, the heaviest scene of all time. And 3, 2, 1. Hi, nice to meet you. I'm Frank. And Joanne, please,
cry.
I have a family.
Exactly. Cry and scream like you're going to die.
Far out.
He nails it. It's very upsetting.
My point is that Jeremy Renner gives him that sort of human quality too, because he does feel genuinely and sincerely apologetic. Ugh. Like, I can't help you. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, he has to leave. It's. That's a hard. You about to cry,
that
Tom?
That scene fucks me up.
Yeah,
really.
That, badly I don't blame you
because it's also that he recovers from it so abrupt. So that scene is him going in, pointing a gun at him, and being like, "It is easier for me to shoot you than deal with you being alive." And I need telling the translator, like, "You've got to explain it to him. I will kill him because the bomb is the more important thing." Mm. And it's that we've seen the whole movie. James come apart or undone whenever he has to deal with a human element. Yeah. Whenever there is a human element or a human component to the bombing, he can't handle it. But even though there's an emotional charge to it, and that scene is so devastating when he's apologizing, in the very next scene he's fine. Mm. And that's the moment where Sandborn's like, how the fuck do you get over that? How do you just get over watching that man die and begging for his life? And like you said, Frank, he just goes, oh, I guess I just don't think about it. And I believe him. I think he just doesn't think about it.
Yeah, right, then he doesn't. But what happens in 10 years?
I'm sure there's, like, you there's know, that trauma carries on and who's to know what that splinter is going to do to him that he's taking on. But Sanborn sits there and is like, do you know there's like a quarter inch difference? Something catches me on the neck. I bleed out in the sand like a pig. No one will care. My parents will, but they don't matter.
They don't matter.
Right? No one will give a shit. I can't be like you. I want a son. And he starts crying in a way where he doesn't sob and his face doesn't move. Water just starts coming out of his eyes.
Yeah, it's a talent. That's a real talent.
It's an incredible performance from him as well. Yep. I love that scene. That entire part of the movie upsets me a lot.
And such a great like little monologue from, was it Mark Boll who wrote it?
Yeah.
Like such an interesting take. Like we're sitting in a car. We've just been through this traumatic thing together and I don't want to be like you. Like to get emotional at him to say you're broken and I'm not going to be like that. But not be like, not to say that directly. Mm. It's inadvertently really hurtful to Jeremy Renner, but it's like, this is what I need to do for my life and this is the lesson I'm learning right now in real time.
Renner takes it offensive.
No, he doesn't.
Earlier when they're drunk and Sanborn asks him, do you think I got what it takes? And he's like, no. And he just tells him plainly, right? Mm. And so later when he's like, I can't be like you, he's like, I told you this. Like, you know this. Yeah. I am this way and I don't know why I'm this way. But this shit excites me.
Mm.
And when the human elements come, it's inconvenient and I have to deal with that in the moment, but I can and I can move past. And it's like he's been taught the entire last 30 minutes of the movie before he's in that scene with Sanborn, every part of the movie is telling him, you can't do this when people are involved. You don't get it. You're not a detective.
You know, when he says, you're not very good with people, but you're a good warrior?
Yes.
That's a great line.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
I have an issue with, and sorry to cut you off.
No, that's okay.
I have an issue with, I buy into him being the adrenaline junkie, just again to simplify it. I don't understand his complete disregard for his own life and worth.
Mm-hmm.
If he does enjoy what he does, he's very good at what he does. I don't think that he would put himself at risk the way he does. I don't buy that part. So a good example of that is the taxi that drives through.
Yeah.
And he puts himself in front of the taxi.
This is the first day they go out.
That part was like, it's a cool scene. It's a cool moment, but I don't honestly buy the fact that he walked in front of his car and stood there with a gun out and expected to come out of that the way he did. Like, that was too much of a gamble.
But did he walk in front of it or did it just drove?
It drove in.
He's walking down the street and that car just, like, fangs it through the barriers.
Yeah.
And then almost hits it. So he's like, what do? I pull a gun, right? That's, like, just instinct. I don't know what else.
And then he slowly goes towards him.
Because he's in that suit.
I guess it's that level of confidence that he has in that scene. It just seems a bit like, it doesn't seem like there's any... I guess he has to be on the front foot, right?
But it's no regard for his own life, it seems. No, it's just like,
You know,
that's when I wrote down the note on the Riggs thing. I was like, this feels very Riggs to me in terms of how he's approaching the situation, not in a defensive manner, not in a what's the next step to get me to safety.
Yeah.
It's the he's on the offensive.
Yes.
Right?
But it's the difference between him and a duck.
Him and a duck.
He can't be flapped. He is unflappable. This man cannot be flapped.
Fuck.
All right? He is not... I was going to make a Flappy Bird reference, but I wasn't sure if anyone was going to get that in 2024.
Oh, mad.
But I agree with you that he seems almost too cool, and the movie does a great job of disabusing you of that by the end.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's because you've just come off Guy Pearce, who's very, like, methodical, plays by the rule book, and then Jeremy Renner comes in. His first scene is, smoke bomb disappears out of sight from his commander.
And what the fuck is that?
He's such a prick.
What is that?
It's great.
He's like creating a diversion so if anyone's watching me, they don't know when I get to the bomb or not, right?
Yeah.
That's his logic. I will say Iraq veterans, especially AODs, have watched this movie and plenty of them have said, this is not really that realistic. To which Mark Boll, who spent a lot of time with the AODs in 2004, was like, look, I wrote what I thought would work. It has to be a film. There has to be tension.
Yeah.
By the way, I don't want to put their counter tactics in there so that the Iraqi insurgents know what they do. So
yeah,
I didn't put any of that stuff in.
That's valid. Yeah.
But there are a couple of criticisms of this movie from Iraqi veterans that I do kind of a little bit. Like one of them I read was like, he's such a maverick and a loose cannon, he would get everyone in danger and trouble. And I'm like, yeah, I think they mentioned that in the film. Yeah, I think that comes up a couple times, buddy. Like, it's not like in the movie they're going, this guy's great.
Obviously, that's the case. But
yes.
Also, I think he would have been pulled from duty a lot quicker.
I kind of agree with that, realistically. But it is very funny that David Morse has that one scene.
Thank you. I was about to say,
yes.
David Morse.
Great scene.
Fucking excellent.
Is he trying to fuck or fight him? I'm not real sure.
It's,
or both.
He's the bravado that comes in, and this is almost the only character that plays the American war stereotype person. I don't know. Yeah. He's like, how many bombs? Oh, man, you're an absolute maverick, aren't you?
He's right on the edge of, like, he's about ecstasy. To pull a knife on you.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, what's your deal here, man? I don't get if you like him or not.
It's loves it.
That's such a good I'm with Mark, which, like, I agree he does, but also he seems frustrated by him. You know what it reminds me of is Willem Dafoe in American Psycho, how Mary Harron was like, we're going to shoot this scene three times in one take.
Yeah.
You're going to know it was him.
Yeah.
In one take, you're going to suspect it was him. Yep. In the other, you're not. And it's almost like she said to David Morse, keep him on his toes. Like, don't let him know whether you are really excited by him or you're about to hit him.
Yeah.
And I've watched this movie five times and every time I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what his ultimate, is he trying to fuck with him or is he trying to tell him that he thinks he's great? It's a little bit of both, right? Mm. It's an incredible scene.
I might be jumping on this earlier, but can we do MVP?
MVP.
It might be David Morse for me.
It's a great scene.
Really?
Yeah, because and
over Mackie and
I think everyone in this is so strong.
Yeah.
I think it's hard to point out, even Councillor John Mayer. everyone's
good line.
everyone's Christian very man. Strong.
Yeah.
I don't think there's too many weak performances in it at all. I think some people are given less to do, unfortunately.
Brian Geraghty's role is unforgiving.
Yeah.
But he's very good at
He's great.
You know, I won't get into it, actually. I'll get into him in a sec. But
I think from a stand-up performance where I felt, and we just literally talked about it, where I felt on the edge of my seat being like, what is happening? I don't know how I feel about this. That brought out the most emotion in me just watching David Morse talk to him. I'm like, what? It was bottled tension.
Yeah.
Which the whole film's tension.
Time under tension. Oh,
this
yeah.
This was bottled. Like, that was more of an IED than anything I'd seen in the film.
That's such a good point.
Good metaphor.
I like that a lot. It's the other scene it reminds me of. Do you guys remember Zodiac? Particularly well.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Do you remember when that guy invites Jake Gyllenhaal down into his basement?
And it's like the handwriting on the poster.
Yeah.
I do all the posters.
I do the handwriting. Most people don't have basements in LA. I do. And leads him down. And you're like, what is this guy's deal? Like, that's David Morse in this. She's like, I don't know what this guy's doing. Why is he doing this?
Yeah.
My MVP is Catherine Bigelow. Like, it is just an astounding piece of directing.
Yeah.
She's really good at giving you such little information that you feel like you have a ton. You get like 5% more info than James and the others. Like, especially when she shows you a couple of shots behind the shoulders of the snipers in that sequence, a couple of times where she shows like the people watching the bombing from different, but it's not enough for us to feel like, oh, I know what's going to happen. We're like, well, I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah.
Now, if I were there and they were like, tell me what you see, I'd be like, I see shit happening, dude. Like, I don't know how to help you with
this. I love the scenes where it's like the guy with the camera and he's looking over at other, like, you're like, who's in charge?
Yeah.
Are they? Because people just seem to be watching.
They just come out on the street
and watch because they. Well, I want to see.
And
what happens.
Like, at my 12 o'clock, you see him? No, I don't see him. He's at my fucking 12 o'clock, man. Yeah, like, and they're trying to keep eyes on everyone. Like, the way she directs this film is exceptional.
Incredible talent, especially for being Juice's sister as well. Juice Bigelow, male gigolo. Fantastic. Really, like a very like nepotism at its finest, but a great, so, very talented.
No,
family.
I have to ask this.
Do
is
you think
his name is Juice in the movie?
It's Juice Bigelow.
Is that his name?
Must be. What else would it be?
I don't fucking
There's
know.
There's not a chance. That's the sequel, right? Like,
no, I think it's Juice Bigelow, male gigolo.
I do not think.
Yeah, and then it's your. Yeah, his name is Juice Bigelow.
Is it really?
Yeah, 100%.
Oh, that's so funny that I was trying to hang shit
okay,
there.
Okay, so Catherine Bigelow, I would say famously known for Point Break.
Point
and
Break.
This would be her two.
Well, Zero Dark Thirty after this.
Yeah, of course, which is also Mark Boll.
Mark
written
Boll.
By.
Yes. She was like.
And James Cameron's ex-wife.
Who encouraged her to make this film.
And said, I wouldn't bet against her.
We'll get into maybe some Butler's Pantry stuff after your MVP.
No, we don't have time.
Who's your MVP, Frank?
Go on.
Anthony Mackie.
Yeah, okay.
Just because I was happy to see him do well.
Yeah.
I've seen him for years and I go, I hate that guy. And I went, wow, he's actually really talented. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's your chance. Yeah. Good for
and
you.
And he played the tough role in this.
I think so. I think Jeremy Renner's performance is
weird noise.
Exceptional. But Anthony Mackie matches
but
with him. And like,
but I think
Jeremy Renner's almost the obvious MVP. Like, Oscar nom.
Yeah.
Breakout role for him. Anthony Mackie has a bit less to do, but it's an interesting role.
Mackie
and he has more of a twist.
So reactive to Renner and the chaos that ensues, you know, him, you know, so.
And he's trying to be the mature, responsible one to some degree, but
in this situation, there's so many levels to how he has to handle, you know, all of these moments.
He's not a wet blanket in the sense that, you know.
As a person, he is.
Sorry?
As a person. Because
it's so weird. I've never heard this Mackie resentment before. I've liked him in bit everything I've seen.
Bit of talk.
Bit of lackey with Mackie, you know what I mean?
I've liked him in everything I've seen him in.
You've liked him as the Falcon?
But when I see him in MCU, I disregard him because I'm like, yeah, he's like the 30th most important person.
Yeah.
In the same way that when I see Jeremy Renner in the MCU, I'm like, yeah, whatever.
Hawkeye the series is really good.
I don't care.
He wears the purple suit.
Oh, I'm sorry.
There you are. Oh, no, that's Katniss Everdeen. Oh, no, never mind. You have a branding issue. Okay. Butler's Pantry?
Yeah, let's.
The Butler in a pantry with a mic. The Butler's Pantry.
Oh, I gave it the second.
I have one of those, you know, when you're a kid and you have those.
What's in the pantry, Tom? 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 Tom, what's in the pantry, Tom?
Okay, let me have a look. Ooh, sunflower seeds. Let's talk about the Oscars.
This film
won Best Director, Best Picture, Best Original Screenplay. Mm-hmm. It also, I think, won Cinematography, or maybe it was nominated, but it was nominated for...
Nom for Cinematography.
Nom for Cinematography, sorry.
Won for Editing.
Editing.
Nominated for Score.
Sure.
Winner for Sound Mixing.
That makes sense.
Winner for Sound Editing.
Always they give the sounds to the
I want to believe Frank, but...
Oh, yeah, who knows?
I just don't know anymore.
Just
Frank reads facts from the internet, and I just don't know what's true.
Is that
anymore.
4chan you've got there, man? I don't know if that's...
Catherine Bigelow, the first female director to win Best Director.
This is true.
This is like the massive thing.
This is the one. This is
what did... Is it... Barbara Streisand?
Barbara Streisand gave it to her. Yes, Streisand gets up.
Oh, the time has come.
She gets up goes, now for the first time, or not the first time, one of the first times, the winner could be a woman and quivers like everyone's scared. And who was she?
And then she sings Don't Run in My Parade. So 5 minutes later, they come back and do the award. It's good.
Who was she up against for Best Director?
Yeah, good question.
Someone you mentioned just earlier.
Oh,
Juice Bigelow? Rob Schneider.
That actually hurt. That felt like I got punched. She was up against James Cameron.
For Avatar. For Avatar, yes. Yeah.
I did know that.
But yeah.
More like Boring Tar, right?
Am I right? And against Jason Reitman for Up in the Air.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Up in the Air, against
Quentin Tarantino for Inglourious Poo Poo Poo.
Sure.
Wow, same time.
What's the other one? It's not Neil Blomkamp for District 9, is it?
No.
Who's the other one?
It's right there on the screen. Look in front of you.
Don't let him.
You won't pick it.
Okay, well,
you're dumb.
Let me tell you this. I could almost tell you that was the first year since the 40s that they brought back 10 nominees, because this is the bit of the Butler's Pantry stuff, which is the year before, Dark Knight was not nominated for Best Picture. And everyone lost their minds and was like, what are the Oscars for? Not only is this a grand achievement, like a box office and mass popular appeal, people agree it is a critically, like, and actually craft-wise, performance-wise, everything is top-notch in this. So why isn't this film getting nominated?
Yeah.
So they go, all right, let's extend it. 10 nominees for Best Picture from now on.
Wow.
Can I tell you what they are? Let's see.
Yes, you can try.
Inglourious Basterds.
Yes.
Avatar.
Yes.
Up in the Air.
Yes.
Hurt Locker.
Yes.
Up.
Yes.
An Education.
Yes.
District 9.
Yes.
The Blind Side.
Yes.
The only whole list. Precious.
Yes.
Precious.
And this is something. The last one is something that you would not describe me as.
A serious man.
Yeah.
That's a great hint.
Loaded Base.
Which is Coen Brothers.
So who was nominated? Was Precious nominated for director?
That's it.
Lee Daniels. Yes. So it was, by the way, strong 10. There's shit movie in there, and then the other nine are
It
good
has to be
great.
The Blind Side.
The Blind Side. Sandra
sucks.
Bullock.
The Blind Side eats
She
my
won
ass.
For that, man. It's She's, terrible, man. Oh, wow. You don't understand what the Oscars
Let's
mean.
Let's not do The Blind Side.
That was 1,000 people unsubscribing.
That's optimistic. That's fucking optimistic.
You heard about the fact that the guy who that's based on came out and was just like, all that's false. They exploited me.
I got nothing.
Yeah, absolutely. They exploited you and then made a film and made more money on it.
I don't see why you'd make that movie. Because it's The Blind Side.
Deadpool reference. There's a cure for blindness in his floor. Nice. It's
next to the cocaine.
It's under the cocaine.
Under the cocaine.
It's very good.
Hurt Locker, one.
Hurt Locker it won. And now the next thing is this is Best Director for Kathryn Bigelow, which is fantastic. And in the years since, there have been two women who have won Best Director. But even so, it's still...
Nomadland and...
The Year After.
Fucking... The Year After. What's
the year? The Year After. The Year After Nomadland, also director. Kiwi director.
Taika Waititi?
Yes. No, it's not
Kiwi
even.
Kiwi director.
Jane Campion wins for Power of the Dog. She's Kiwi.
Ah, Power of the Dog.
So, she's actually, before that, she was one of the only women ever nominated for the piano in the 90s.
Did she play the piano?
Quite a lot. No, she doesn't. Chloe Zhao for Nomadland.
Thank you.
And then Greta Gerwig was nominated for Lady Bird.
Yep.
And you've had this year, Justin Trier for Anatomy of a Fall. Yep. All of this to say, hey, Oscars, I don't know. A lot of good movies out there directed by women, but also give women more directing roles. It's kind of weird that we're still in 2024 and it's been 8 women in almost 100 years nominated. Yeah,
that's
stupid,
gross.
Real stupid. But great that she won for this because Hell it's an exceptionally directed
and
film.
Deserves.
Yes.
Like, incredible film.
It's really.
Except for the ending.
Yeah.
To go back.
I get what you guys feel.
You just want more closure. I know that's kind of the point. She's like, well, he's back off to war. It doesn't matter what happens to them because that's the whole point. Doesn't matter.
Can we talk about Geraghty for a sec? Just because I said before. He's one of those interesting actors that I've seen in two things, but I've watched them so many times that I'm always like, oh, it's Brian Geraghty. This and Jarhead.
Yeah. Well, that's how he got this role, right?
He's this same character, essentially. Yeah. He's this nervous pervis in Jarhead who just like doesn't know what to do.
Is that his character name?
Nervous pervis? No.
Oh, I'm so nervous.
I spilled the milk on the ID.
Don't cry. He plays it so well, though. His face just lends himself to that
role. I'm going to be honest. I tuned out for 20 seconds there, and I look up, and I just don't know what I was listening
to.
No one does.
That's the experience of listening to this. He does have that look to him where you can sell he's sweating behind his eyeballs. Like, he's so worried. And I love his final scene because it's him in the helicopter, and Jeremy Renner's like, I'm sorry, buddy. He's like, fuck you, piece of shit. You got me shot, you fucking asshole. Why don't you go fuck yourself? And then Anthony Mackie's like, safe travels, man. Yeah, I love you, bro. So fucking mad. Like, you're my best friend. He just switches like that. It's so funny.
That's awesome. Yeah, I do love that moment.
It's a great moment.
He's been waiting to say it for a while.
Oh, yeah. He's on so much morphine. He's just like, fuck you, man.
What about the scene where they're talking, Brian Geraghty and Anthony Mackie are like,
oh,
these bombs could go off at any time.
Yeah, these things can fire all the time.
You'd have to fill in the report. You're not thinking about killing him.
Wait, are we actually doing this?
And they're just like, don't say anything. And you're like, do people have these conversations? I dislike my coworker, so I'm going to blow him up.
And then it cuts to a shot far away of Jeremy Renner with his gloves going, found him!
His most jovial moment.
Where he's just living his best life, listening to fucking the guy, Uncle Cracker, probably on his headphones.
Rafe
looks good.
The two hostages run away and he goes, they're worth $500,000 each, and he runs away.
Dead or alive!
Yeah. He shoots them down.
Cackling to himself.
That's very funny.
And it's very funny to think that you see that when I saw it at cinemas and Guy Pearce dies in the first 10 minutes, you're like, whoa. And Ralph Fiennes shows up and you're like, she's not going to do it again. Yeah. He's dead in 10 minutes.
I like, and some American films do that very well. I've seen a few American war films, like modern war films that do this very well, is when sniper fire from a distance, you don't hear it.
Yeah.
And then just from nowhere, especially in a quiet scene, you just hear,
yes.
Yeah.
And someone hits the ground. You're like, that can be done so well or so badly as well.
Mm-hmm.
This film did it very well.
It's very scary.
A lot of the
terrifying
the combat and, like we said, the explosions, it feels much more realistic. Mm. Like she's going, oh, I better get this right.
Mm. Yeah.
Like it's a real point of focus for her.
Yes. Mm. She reduces it down to like the base level of tactics and kind of the inherent absurdity of war in that once it does come down to like five people who are a kilometer apart from each other, it's just like, who's going to wait the other one out? We're just going to slowly see who can get the other one if we're going to watch you and we're going to be able to like get a bead on you with my spotter, you know, which is very Jarhead as well, the whole sequence with the spotter and stuff.
Very like, American Sniper.
I really like
which,
that movie.
American Sniper.
I really like Jarhead. This movie's way better than Jarhead.
And worse than that is American Sniper.
I've never seen American Sniper.
I just feel like it's that's a propaganda film.
It's worth it.
That's where you're like, America, I'm the best sniper in the world.
Also the baby scene at the end, the fake
it's
baby.
It's the only thing I know about that movie.
The other thing I love about this scene is that when he finally dusts off that final sniper, you don't see the shot.
Yeah.
you see this beautiful shot of the cartridge hitting the sand and then flipping, and it's in slow-mo and it's really well done.
She's so good.
And then it cuts straight to Renner and he goes, "Yeah, we got him."
But then they
you don't see the actual final blow.
They then sit there and wait watching for what seems like it's like a time lapse, like 2 hours, because like we've got to wait and see if anything happens, and then like I think we're done.
If they're just wait, if they're just waiting there for the Americans to leave, then they're free to go.
Yeah,
yeah.
I love the little moment of getting the Capri Sun juice box, and he brings it up, and he's like, "Drink it, man, drink it." Like just a beautiful moment of care. Like finally there's some sort of bond between them.
So it's James giving Mackie or Sanborn the Capri Sun, but before that, helping Eldridge clean the bullets.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Come on, man, come on, man. We got to do it." And he's yelling at him earlier. And then he's like, okay, what I need to do is like use my patient voice here. And he is capable. And again, it's almost like when there's a problem to solve that there
he
is.
He will pivot how he does it and he'll solve the problem.
Yes, he will. And he can engage in like a specific like circumstance that doesn't sprawl in the way that Beckham's apparent death does, and then trying to find those guys later in the alleys. Once it gets out of his control there, he gets in over his head and he can't handle it. But when it's two guys in a trench and, you know, what is shooting at people like at a distance with a sniper, but it's just like a very, very long distance form of working out a bomb diffuser, working out an opportunity to try and work out, am I going to get you first? Are you going to get me? Am I going to deactivate this? Or are you going to pull the trigger?
Yeah. Like,
and he can work in that zone.
A battle of wits.
Yes. It is. I always remember there being a chess piece in his box, and in my head I'm like, "Oh, it's a bit on the nose," and there isn't. But in my head, one of the things has
a bit
chess
on the
piece.
Nose. And the thing I made up
just before the scene, I'm always like, "Oh yeah," at one point he pulls out like a pawn, right? No, he doesn't. I just have in my head that happens.
That would have been on the nose.
That would.
So if you directed this film, it would have been. Really
I would have put that in there. Yes.
All right. Is anyone going to throw anything in?
Yeah, I might actually. I think. What did I say? 7.7.
Both of you did.
Yeah, having talked about it, it is pretty
great movie.
8.3.
Yeah, all right, nice work. Okay, well done, Tom. You did it.
Yeah.
Pat on the back.
Thank you so much. My back's sweaty.
We talked about a movie you love. Of course, it's sweaty. I'm not throwing anything in.
That's okay, but I appreciate your time.
It's still great.
Yeah.
Great time.
Really good.
So hit us up on Instagram or give us an email. We are the pals, ohheypals@gmail.com, or throw in the pal at Instagram. Tell
we're
us
we're waving.
Bye.
Bye. Listener, we're waving.
Bye. Throw in the pal. Thanks for listening to Throw in the Pal. My name is Frank.
My name is Marcus.
My name's Tom.
I was going to try and find a bit of like, was this episode your Hurt Locker? But that's pretty negative. We're not that bad, right?
No, I don't think so.
No, Hurt's so good. Have I used that before?
Come on, baby, make it hurt so.
What's that song by Nine Inch Nails?
Pain. Oh, my God.